I would like to ask you to think about something that has happened this week that you have recognized as a gift from God. It could be as something as simple as a friend giving you a call, or you speaking to a family member, recognizing in them that the special relationship that you share. It may be something as big as a promotion at work. It may be something, you know, whatever it is. Think for just a moment. What and how has God blessed you this week? I ask this question because I'm looking for your reaction. And I know sometimes when we get together and we're focusing, we may be focusing on a lot of things, and certainly we have a lot of things to grab our attention. Sometimes it's just hard, and I know this because I've experienced it. Sometimes in the middle of the assembly, in a time of worship like this, we're still worried about, or we're still consumed by some concern, some worry. But you know, worship is a time of celebration. And we can. God gives us the ability to celebrate even in and among the problems of life. And this is, I think, part of what Jesus is talking about in John chapter 16, verse 33, when he says, "In this world you'll have troubles, but take heart. I have overcome the world." And he says, I tell you this so that you might have my peace. We have that ability. Now, the reason why I say this is to kind of help you focus and join me in this moment. Because I want to make this point. Worship is a celebration. And we are able to worship and celebrate this way because we are now reminded of the good gifts that God has given us. And he has given us so many. In fact, Paul tells us in Acts chapter 17, he's speaking to the Athenians, and he's saying, you know, God is not very far from any of us. In him we live and move and have our being. And that's one way of saying, another way of saying, you know, every breath that we take is really a gift from God. And so, you know, you consider that it just becomes easier to recognize the goodness and the glory of God. The obvious gifts of God to us sometimes are the extraordinary. John 3, verse 16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. That's an obvious one, isn't it? It's an extraordinary gift. And it's, to us, obvious. And so what we learn from and what we understand from this gift? Well, we understand that in Jesus we have salvation. And from that salvation, God gives us the gift of his Holy Spirit to dwell with us, to live with us, to guide us, to help us. When we allow the Spirit to so lead our lives, we have peace with other people. And so, when we do, when we come to that, we begin to, and I've experienced this. I'll be honest. I'll give you a moment of honesty here. I had a habit of reacting, allowing other drivers to cause me to react. And one day, I felt innocent about what I was being accused of. And so I pulled up to kind of question the other driver. We're sitting side by side, and I'm saying, you know, what? And I got cursed at very vehemently. And I thought, okay. And from that incident, it was, you know, several months ago. From that incident, I decided I will not take offense. And he thought that I had offended him by pulling out and not stopping at a stop sign. There was no stop sign there, in my defense. But I decided, you know, I'm not going to give offense. I'm not going to take offense. And if I have given someone offense, even if I feel innocent about it, I'm going to apologize. I'm going to say, you know, it wasn't my intention. And submitting to the Spirit that way, and this was, you know, something that I felt, you know, how can I live to a greater degree to glorify God? And so coming to this, we haven't changed our clock. I was just looking and thinking, okay, I'm getting off track a little bit. I don't want to get too far off track. And I'm already way off track. It's 10 after 12. you know, I have been living by that mantra, you know, give no offense, take no offense. And we were coming to church this morning, and I saw someone laying on his horn behind some poor woman who is probably going to church with her husband, and she, you know, she's being careful. She's not pulling out in front of traffic. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? Yeah. And you know, I'm just saying, you know, poor woman, you know, Lord, help her, you know, help her keep calm. But that's part of, you know, having peace with other people. And that's what the Lord wants us to do, to live at peace with all men as much as it's possible for us. But then when we have that peace, then what we're gifted with is more of God's peace. And Paul calls it the peace that passes understanding. You know, I can say that some things I should be worried about, but I'm not. And I the reason why, and I've shared this with you a few weeks ago, I cast my cares on the Lord. He cares for me. And where I'm weak, He is strong. There's no reason for us to worry about so many things that we otherwise worry about. Those are the kinds of gifts that we receive. You know, we receive them from the obvious, the more extraordinary. But what about the ordinary gifts that God gives us? These sometimes are not so obvious to us. And in other words, we take them for granted. We don't recognize them. What are they? Well, one would be our health. You know, we take it for granted until we lose it. You know, what's the gift? This is the way I am. I'm always this way. Until we lose our health, and then we realize what a gift it is. Another is work. We often consider work to be a burden, but when we lose our work, and then engage in finding work, we realize what a blessing work is from God. Happiness is a gift from God, and sometimes the simple things bring the biggest smiles. Well, one particular gift commonly held as ordinary is the gift of husband-wife relationship. And I point this out by pointing to Proverbs 31, verse 10. This proverb says, "An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels." And it's interesting to consider this passage this way. Susan is a precious jewel, a gift from God in my life. And we talked about this a little bit in preparation for this message. You know, we shared this and we talked about it. She certainly is, and she considers me to be a gift from God. And that's how we should look at the marital relationship. Husband and wife, one or the other, it's a gift from God. And looking at this passage, though, it's stated this way, who can find? And so people kind of take the gift of marriage for granted. And certainly it's not something that everybody has to have to be happy. The Apostle Paul tells us that in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. But for those of us who do need this relationship, it's a gift from God. And when we learn this, we recognize how valuable this gift is to us. Well, how is it a gift? And look, to point your attention to Proverbs 18, verse 22. And if you're looking at the outline in your bulletin, this will be the first blank space to be filled in. The man who finds a wife finds a treasure. And the treasure is from the New Living Translation 2. And I'm looking at here the Living Bible. She's a blessing to him from the Lord. And that second phrase there is where we pick up and understand that the marital relationship is God's gift to us. He looks into our lives and he sees that we need someone in our lives in this capacity. You can have other people in your lives in another capacity. But for many of us, we have that need in our lives where we just need someone to walk along beside us in this way. And God recognizes that. And so he gives us this gift. And that's why I point this verse out to you, to help you to see what a gift is for us in this marital relationship. God is telling us that this ordinary relationship is an extraordinary, valuable gift of God to us. I have told some of you, not all of you, but some of you, the story I want to share. I'm going to build on the reasons why that I gave about this example when I told you before. I want to build on that and give you another reason why I'm telling you this story. Some of you I'm telling you again, some of you for the first time. Susan and I met in a teen Bible class in November of 1975. I was a freshman in Bible college in West Tennessee, and she was a senior in high school attending a church in Williamsburg, Virginia. And I came home with my roommate for the Thanksgiving holiday, and we went to church on Wednesday night, and we went into a Bible class, and my roommate, who I came home with, was telling me, he says, "Now, this girl back on the back row is this girl in the U.S." And so I kind of was listening very intently, and I want to know. And then he says, "And Susan, she's back there, and she's the third from the end." I said, "Susan." So I had to stand up and look, and I looked at her, and I said, "Why, she's cute." And I want you to remember that phrase. We met that night. I had to introduce myself to her about five or six different times in order to get her to talk to me. But over that weekend, we had an occasion to visit and talk with one another and get to know one another. And so my roommate and I were leaving to go back to West Tennessee, I told Susan goodbye at her house, at her door, and got back in the car, and my roommate said, "You're going to marry her one day." And that's the second phrase that I want you to remember as I go through this story. And I said, "Yeah, right." I said, "We just met, and we live 1,000 miles apart. I don't think so." But as it turns out, Susan came to, we started riding, we didn't have emails, and it was too expensive to make a phone call. So I sent letters, and she sent letters back to me, and we started communicating. And then next year, she came to my Bible college, and we started dating. And in 1980, we got married. So through the course of our relationship, and then our marriage and having children and me interacting with her family, and her family became very dear to me, and they kind of took me under their wing and cared for me, her mom and dad, while she was still in school. I was a year ahead of her, so I was actually ministering in Portsmouth, traveling over to Newport News, spending the weekend sometimes with her mom and dad, and get to know them. And I got to know them very well, some of their habits and some of their peculiarities. And Susan, after we married, she began to tell me about how that her family would take vacations to Western North Carolina, where I was born and raised. And And I would listen. I thought, that's interesting. You probably traveled right through my little hometown in Old Fort, North Carolina. And it's right at the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. And, the mountain roads that you haven't had to travel. Her family lived in Bryson City, but they would travel through. And I thought, you probably had to come through my little town. And she would tell me about how that she would hang on as a little girl to the back of the seat behind her dad. And, she was fearful of the windy, curvy roads. And so it took me years, literally years, before I began to put two and two together to remember something that I'd never forgotten, but I just never had tied the two together. When I was a small child living in Old Fort, me and several of my little buddies would walk around and just adventure and have fun. And one day, we were walking across a gasoline parking lot, and someone said, "Look at that little girl over there in that car. You're going to marry her one day." That's that one of those phrases that I told you to remember. And of course, my buddies, we were probably 7, 8, maybe 9 years old. We were kids, and none of those guys are going to say, "Oh, look at that little girl. You're going to marry her one day." And I didn't think a whole lot about it, but it did cause me to say, "Well, let me go look." And so I went over to the car, and her dad was pumping gas. And true to his nature, when several of us boys were milling around his car, he said, "Now you boys be careful and don't scratch my car." And that's exactly her dad. Well, so I look in and I see a little girl, and I see a little boy. Susan has a little sister and a little brother. And then I saw who I am sure was Susan. And I said when I saw her, "Wow, she's cute." That second little phrase. And I'm telling you this for a reason. You think, and it took me a long time to convince Susan that what I remember having happened was a gift from God. And here's why I tell you this. What happened really happened. Why did it happen? Why would God share that with me? There's at least two reasons, and I think I remember telling you this, that those of you that I share this with, that number one, and it took me years, again, it took me literally years to figure out why. When I put two and two together, I thought, well, why would he do that for me? Why would he share that with me? And then I came to the understanding after studying a book titled "Developing Hearing God, Developing a Conversational Relationship with God." It really is possible, and not only possible, it's necessary to develop a kind of relationship with God where He actually speaks into our lives. How? Through His Word, of course, but in so many other diverse ways. God is not limited. God is able to speak into our lives as He chooses and as He pleases. And I believe that He spoke into my life as a little child to have me one day say, "Folks, it's possible for God to actually speak into your life. In fact, He does it all the time. The problem is, we just are not listening." God literally speaks into our lives all the time, but we haven't developed that kind of relationship where we are listening for God and able to hear God when He actually does speak into our lives. But He does. And so that's number one. But secondly, number two, God spoke into my life in order to affirm the gift that He was going to give me years later. Why would he do that before? Why not after? Well, I don't question God. But when I put two and two together, Susan, as a wife, as a gift from God, became so much more valuable to me. And that's the point that I'm telling you now. When we recognize the gifts from that we have, being from God, they become so much more valuable. And what happens when we value something? We prize it. And then we turn to the giver and we give honor. We give thanksgiving. And so I told you that worship is a celebration and a thanksgiving. That's what we have to do, is we have to come in and remember how good God is to us. And when we remember that, we offer God praise and give Him thanksgiving. And that is what our worship is. It is a celebration of the goodness of God. And so, having received this word from the Lord as a little child, and taking me through the experience of it through my life, and this is one of many, but you know, why would He do that? For me to be able to stand before you today and say, listen, God speaks to us when we're listening, and He gives us gifts that we need so that we can honor Him and thank Him. And so in looking at this and in seeing this, we have a gift from God, and it increases our appreciation of the gift and also of the giver. So the question now becomes, God gives us such great and wonderful gifts, and sometimes they're small and ordinary. They're not invaluable at all. They're so valuable. But they sometimes seem small and ordinary, and sometimes they're huge and extraordinary. And He gives, our cup is overflowing. The question is, what do we then give Him? What are you giving to God? And this, again, is another fill in the blank, giving to God. What are you giving to God? Now, I want to walk you through this. Looking here at Romans 12, verse 1, give yourselves wholly to God in view of His holy sacrifice for you. How can you give yourself up for God? By understanding that He has given His life for you. That's how we're able to do it. And so Paul says here in Romans 12, verse 1, give yourselves wholly to God in view of His holy sacrifice for you. This is the way you honor Him in worship. And Paul is not talking about the 10 o'clock hour of worship on Sunday mornings. He's talking about our lives. He's talking about this is how you live your life as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. You give yourself fully and completely to God. You hold nothing back. He has held nothing back from you. He's given it all. And in return, when we understand that, and that's the only way that we could possibly give ourselves up for God, is to understand His sacrifice for us. And so when we do, we give ourselves holy to God. Now, I have here John 3:16, and you're familiar with it. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. Have you ever noticed 1 John 3, verse 16? Write it down. Remember it. It's so important, and it's such a parallel to John 3:16. John wrote them both. And he didn't put the chapter and verses, you know, somebody else did later, and how that just happened the way that it did. But for easy memory, and you have John 3:16 memorized, when you want to remember, well, how do we love God? How are we supposed to love God? We know how God has loved us. How are we to love God? Remember 1 John 3, verse 16. John says, this is how we know what love is, or you could say it this way, this is how we know how to love God. Just as He gave His life for us, we are to give our lives for one another. And He's talking about the church. He's talking about brothers and sisters. And this, again, is how, you know, we are answering this question. What are you giving to God? We recognize all that God has given us. Now the question is to us, and God is going to be asking us, You know, when you sit down and encounter God in your devotional time, in your private time, and in those moments where God's got your attention and He's going to start asking you questions, you're going to have to answer this question. Well, what am I giving you, Lord? I mean, you've given me so much. What am I giving you? Then as you start, you know, as you start answering this question, remember, here's how I've loved you. Here's how I want you to love me. As Christ gave His life for us, I want you to give your life for your brothers and sisters. Now, this is not even the community out here that we don't yet know. This is the people here in this body, in this church, in this community. He's saying, I want you to love one another. How? By giving yourself up. What does that mean? It means living for another before you live for yourself. It means instead of going out and having a big dinner this afternoon, consider going and sharing a meal with someone in need. You know, and it's easy to do that. And it's not going to happen all the time, but occasionally you'll find that there's somebody who has a need that you need to put them first in order before you put yourself. That's what I'm talking about. And you can take those kinds of examples and just keep on going with them. So there was a young mother teaching her 5-year-old manners, you know, how to say please and thank you. And they went to the mall one day, and they were walking down the aisle, and someone out in front of a candy store was getting samples of candy. And so this salesperson gave the little boy a piece of candy, and he unwrapped it real quick and popped it in his mouth, and he started chewing. And the mother says, now, what do you say? And the little boy looked at his mom, and then he looked at the salesperson, and he said, please? Can I have another? And what we see from that is that something is incomplete until gratitude is expressed. And so what I want to do is call your attention to just such an incident in the Bible. It occurs in Luke chapter 17, verses 11 through 19. And I have these on screen so that you can read along with me. Now on His way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As He was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met Him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. When He saw them, He said, go, show yourselves to the priest. And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked Him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? And then He said to him, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. Now, just a few details about this. Jews to whom Jesus was speaking didn't think that Samaritans, the main grateful character in this event, that Jews didn't think Samaritans could be saved. But Jesus says, anyone and everyone can be saved by faith. 10 were healed. All were happy. And you have to understand that to appreciate what Jesus is really saying. These men were living a death sentence. Leprosy meant sure and painful and miserable death. They were going to die alone. They could not participate in community. They couldn't hold their children or grandchildren. They were exiled from community. And they were dying slowly and painfully They were dying. And so when Jesus heals them, they're ecstatic. They recognize easily the gift that God has given them. And you know, it's natural to enjoy the good gifts that God gives us. But do we always turn back and give God the praise? Jesus interpreted the lack of expression of gratitude, and listen carefully, as ingratitude. You know, you can be as happy as you want to be having been healed. But until you turn and give God the praise, you cannot be recognized as being grateful. And so merely celebrating being happy without giving God the praise is kind of like living our lives for our good pleasure and not being concerned about others in need. And so the application here that I want us to make very quickly: Jesus cleanses you from something much worse than leprosy. You know, Isaiah says in Isaiah 64, verse 6, our righteousness is like filthy rags to the Lord. Consider man's depravity. And you can think and consider the gamut of depraved actions and attitudes and the results. And what does that mean before God? Deserving death. But because we turn to Jesus, Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21, God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. We don't have to present to God our righteousness. We present to God the righteousness of Christ because he gives it to us as a gift. It's not possible to accept the gift of God's salvation without also accepting the responsibility of sharing it with others. You know, that's something that we kind of lose sight of, and it's unfortunate when that happens. I see it happening all the time. We lose sight. We want to grab hold of and we want to claim Jesus as Savior, but we began to lose the enthusiasm about recognizing Jesus as Lord, and because when we do, we begin to recognize the responsibility that we have to Him, to follow Him and to do the work that He has commissioned us to do. And so the challenge here is to rise above our inclination to be served. And that's what we all want. And sometimes we deserve to be served. I'll put it this way. We need to be served. You take a newborn child of God. They need to be served. They're not in a capacity of faith or ability to do a whole lot for God. They could do some things, but they just don't have the capacity. They need to grow up. And as they're growing up in their faith, God is going to bless them with gifts and abilities to serve and to minister to others. But for right now, sometimes people just need to be served. But for those of us who have been given the milk of God's Word, and we have been nurtured and now are eating the strong meat of God's Word, you know, we have to recognize, you know, we now need to turn and serve others. And so this is the challenge, to become like Christ. And I think if you have on your outline, 1 Corinthians 3, verse 18, that it's the Spirit who's making us more and more like Christ. That is our responsibility. Kyle Eidelman, preacher in Louisville, Kentucky, says, you'll never be amazed by grace until you are aware of your own sinfulness. And so, looking at this, and this is a ship I think I pulled off when I was Googling, searching for John Newton. John Newton wrote the famous hymn, Amazing Grace. John Newton was the kind of man who was depraved and sinful. He lived a life of a slave trader. And it was during that kind of life, it was in the midst of a storm that he met God. That he came before the mighty God and he bowed his knee in humility and recognized that he needed to change his life. And he was only able to do that because of the gift that God gave him to recognize his own sinfulness and the grace that God was offering through Jesus Christ. And so in recognizing this, he gave his life to Christ. He became one of the most prolific writers of Christian hymns that there's ever been. And he's written this beautiful hymn in this way. And so today, as I conclude this message, I want to conclude this way to say, maybe you're here and you haven't yet professed your faith in Jesus. We want to give you that opportunity. Give you the opportunity to stand before this assembly to confess that Jesus is the Lord of your life, the Savior of your soul, and turn to Him. But also, as we make this call, you may be here and just carrying a burden that you need to share with your church family. We want to give you that opportunity. Come before the Lord. Come to the altar. Cast your cares upon the Lord in that way. If you come and you want me to pray with you, I certainly will. If you want to come and you want to pray by yourself, by all means do that. If you come and you want someone else to pray with you, let them know so that they can join.